following takes place between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m.
Everybody, and welcome to FPC Radio Live. It is Tuesday, February the 18th, 2020. That's right, we were back after a nice little brief three-day weekend. We were back ready to rock the mic, and of course, I cannot do that without my co-host. And yes, that's right, he is the, I'm not going to go through it again, but the million-dollar man, Mr. Mike Debate. Mike, how are we doing today?
La la la. Look, buddy, I would love to give you that trademark million dollar man laugh, that Ted DiBiase laugh. I don't think the throat's quite up to it this morning, but I can definitely muster out a nice la la la. So, you know, that we take the good with the bad. But thank you for the kind introduction. I appreciate it.
There we go.
There we
go.
That's
it.
That's it. See, whenever I'm in doubt, go to the real source. That's the real million dollar man, folks.
That's right. That's right. And look, we obviously, if you listen on Friday, we had a lot of fun, little Valentine's Day themed show, having Rodney Debate Field on, and of course Brother Ian stopped by. They are not around today, unfortunately. Actually, you know, we actually got a lot of response from that. I have some comments, you know, about that appearance by those two. It was actually pretty shocking. Do you want to hear them? Or are you not interested?
No. I would love to hear this. I truly would. It'd be great.
So first up. Please stop talking. All right, that was in all caps, actually. So they were very emphatic about that. My ears are bleeding. And then there's like seven in a row talking about suing us. So there was a lot of reaction to our fantastic impressions on Friday. No, look, I'm assuming, you know, since people are still tuning into the show, or at least the numbers indicate they are, you know, it wasn't that much of a failure. No, that was a lot of fun. We had a little fun with it, and of course, you know, we've created a new everyday sound drop for us. Because we know love is not just about one day. It's a 365 day a year thing, and that's
it.
What,
is
you know,
a full 365 day a year thing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, we're gonna keep with it. Now, you know, we're not necessarily gonna be doing the entire show with the backdrop of the Brother Love theme song, but some days, depending on how we feel that day, maybe we'll break it out. But no, that was a lot of fun on Friday, and of course we decided we had so much fun we had to take yesterday off. So no, we're both feeling a little bit under the weather. So Mike, I'm glad you're feeling a little bit better, being able to power through all this.
Thank you, my friend. Much appreciated. It would have been definitely great to share the microphone yesterday with you on President's Day. Probably could have you know, broken out some presidential impressions if we wanted to. But you know what? Everything works out for a reason. And, you know, the health gods just weren't smiling on me yesterday. But back among the living today and feeling better. Moving forward, my friend.
No one does that Taft impression quite like you. It's actually world famous, or Rhode Island famous. That is.
Yes, it is. Well, see, I don't even need to use the voice. All I have to do is just sit there with a fake mustache on, and I look like William Howard Taft. Yeah. Actually, more like Andy Reid. But you know, we'll take the good with the bad.
Have we seen both of them in the same room before? I don't know.
We have not. No, we have not. I don't know. Wilford Brimley. By the way, Wilford Brimley's social media game during that whole week of the Super Bowl was phenomenal. I understand I'm coaching a game today. It was like, you gotta love it. It was great stuff.
It's funny, those three like could be like triplets, long lost triplets, like hundreds of years apart, of course, you know, a few of them in particular, but you know, they could all be brothers from you know, different generations. You never know.
Absolutely. You never know.
What's that, 23andMe? Check that out. Get some DNA.
Yep. Definitely.
just pluck a hair from his mustache, it'll be good. But
right.
No, I see, I noticed too, and you know, I love doing these things because they're always kind of fun and always opens up a discussion. But you had done your Patriots Mount Rushmore Unlocked.
Yes, I did.
Yes, that's right. See, yes. I am plugging you. This is what we do here. It's all about love. See, maybe today is a love day. You know, it's the first day after our first episode after our Valentine's Day episode. So we're still in the loving mode today. But you did the Mount Rushmore in honor of President's Day, and I'm going to ask you because I saw this pop up on Twitter, and I know we might agree on, I'd say at least 50% of this list. And I'm going to give a nice little shout out to Joe Manillo, our friend there, who's a big Seinfeld fan, you know, constantly quoting Seinfeld and all that fun stuff. Very, very punny. And if you heard what I said, you'll know what I'm talking about. But
oh, absolutely. Joe is. Yes, you think Ian and I are good. Joe's got a PhD in this stuff, folks. He is phenomenal.
I've never met someone or interacted with someone who is as quick as he is with coming up with a pun. It's quite impressive. I say that completely 100% serious. I mean, it's every time it gets me. Every time I think that I'm not going to get got, I get got. And that tells you something. That tells you that he's good. So anyways, he asked the question, who was the worst like vice president or question got brought up about a president or whatever. That wasn't the right question. That was someone else who asked that question. But my question to you is, who's your Mount Rushmore of fictional presidents? We're not talking about sports here. We can sit here and debate to the world, you know, who's the Mount Rushmore in the NFL. It's Tom Brady, it's Bill Belichick, it's Tom Brady two more times. So that's my opinion. You know, Mount Rushmore, NFL. Okay, I'm joking a little bit. Tom Brady would be on that list, but you know, I'm obviously just kind of being a jerk. But no, you're Mount Rushmore of fictional quarterback or fictional presidents, and you know what? I'm going to actually name two of them for you. And I think I'm going to be right. You think I can do it? You think I'm, you know?
I have a lot of faith in you, okay. My friend. Yeah, okay. I believe yes.
Obviously, David Palmer. I mean, come on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
You know, Palmer might go on I tell you, it'd be tough, but Palmer is one I'd consider for the Washington head, believe it or not. But Palmer is definitely on my Mount Rushmore without any question. I'm not quite willing to say absolutely he'd be the Washington head, but I'll tell you he's in consideration.
Well,
very smart, yeah.
And I would say, like I said, I mean, no doubt in my mind, I was going to say you're going to pick that guy. You're going to pick David Palmer. My second pick for you, and this is something. I think I was more confident about David Palmer. I could pretty much, you know, bet my life savings. Oh yeah, Kyle brings up a great point. Not his brother, Wayne. Wayne was not quite the Palmer we all wanted, you know. But
yeah. No, was just as there just wasn't that same magic. He wasn't quite the same leader that David was. Wayne would not be in my Mount Rushmore. David,
although,
yes. Wayne, no.
Although he had quite the performance with Jack, you know, in season 5 when they were going to meet Christopher Henderson, and you know, all of a sudden Wayne Palmer turned into like this Marine, like all his Marine training came back. You know, that training he never actually got; he just kind of, you know, was in the Marines and all that stuff. But hey,
oh yeah,
we're not here to rip
absolutely.
Wayne Palmer. Yeah, you know, look.
No, it's true. You know, I actually didn't dislike the Wayne Palmer character. I just didn't like him as president. I didn't think he was quite the president that everybody wanted him to be. And, you know, maybe that was by design. Maybe they wanted to show, you know, the greatness of David Palmer and how that even though a pretty good character still couldn't, you know, measure up to you know, him as a president. So maybe that could be by design. You know, you never know. Joel Surnow and the powers that be at 24 are the only ones that would really know that for sure.
Yeah, well, Kyle brings up a good point. At least he was better than President Logan. And that was actually, I think, the question that got this the seed planted in my head was our friend Joe Sapicetti. He asked, who is the worst vice president? And, you know, I brought up Charles Logan, you know, obviously fictional and all that stuff. But in response to Kyrie Irving being elected the VP of the National Basketball Players Association.
Yes.
So that's really where the root of this conversation came in. So the second president, and I'll let you fill in the two afterwards because I know these two. President Whitmore. Independence
Definitely.
Day. Yes.
The Absolutely. Greatest. Absolutely.
The greatest speech.
I mean, ever. How could. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, there's absolutely no way to be able to top that speech in American fictional presidential history. Whitmore definitely has to be on there. Without question, he's on my Mount Rushmore. Two very solid picks so far, my friend. Well, I really I'll be honest with you. You really went to the doldrums on this one, and I'm so glad that you brought this up, because it makes me think. And I've had the other two in my wheelhouse for quite some time, because I had an anticipation that this question might indeed come up at some point. So Whitmore is absolutely on there, and so is Palmer, without any question. I would assume they're on yours as well.
Yeah, oh no, of course. Well, you know, it's funny, Bill Pullman did the commencement speech at UMass back in the day, and I was saying at the time, I was like, if I were him, I would just go up and just do the Independence Day speech word for word, and that's it. You know, don't talk about the future and what you can do when you grow up, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you get that same speech all the time. Imagine if you're sitting in your commencement ceremony, ready to graduate, Bill Pullman, President Whitmore comes up, and all of a sudden he gives you the Independence Day speech. I tell you what, I'd run out there and apply for a job right away.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, if he does that, if he grabs the microphone and just does that speech, doesn't do anything else about the commencement, just gives that speech, he is inspiring a generation of Americans to be the greatest version of themselves that you could possibly imagine.
That's right.
Yep.
I fly.
I'm a pilot.
Okay. That's one thing. That's a movie that I could certainly go off.
But the question was, when he delivered this, was Robert Loggia right under the dais going, yeah, with the Marine hat and his like eighth outfit of the movie? It amazes me. Like, it amazes me that all the entire world is crashing down around them. Like Loggia changes his outfit like five times in this movie.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah. It's great. I mean, look,
it's great. Yeah.
If we're gonna sit here, you know, one of these days, deep into the summer, doldrums, I'm sure we're gonna sit here and we're gonna break down some of our favorite movies. Independence Day is up there for me. I mean,
I think
people who know me know that I'll probably put a certain movie at number one. I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think, what I put up there. Yeah. Shawshank Redemption, for anyone who is questioning that, just put it in.
I don't think
there.
Anybody's questioning that. No. Just like questioning my favorite movie.
Yeah, exactly.
anybody that
clearly
looks at my
it's
Twitter
Cars
timeline,
2.
Yes,
for Mike.
Absolutely. That
not
is
Cars
it. That
1,
is the, yep.
Cars
definitely.
2.
No. Not one. The sequel. One That's of the very right. few sequels That's that right. measure up. No, all kidding aside. Yeah, I think I don't think there's any transparency or any lack of transparency, I think, between Ian and I when it comes to our favorite films. But and we share a love for each other's as well. I mean, you know, Shawshank is definitely in my top five, and then I know Godfather is in Ian's top five.
Oh,
so you know, those movies are indelible classics without any question. Yeah. It's all about the love. It comes back to Brother Love. I love it.
I couldn't resist. You said
yeah,
love
exactly.
It just
yeah, you better
me,
keep
so.
That to about yeah. 15 seconds. That way, the people that are threatening to sue us don't actually come to fruition.
Yeah, I've actually gotten 10 emails just in the time we've been on the air. So
that's it. 10 emails. Yep.
Mostly, they say you suck. So you know.
Yep. Damn it! You will treat me with respect.
You suck. Okay. Before, I know we've asked a very simple question that's taken us nearly 20 minutes to answer, but before we do, that was one of the best coordinated chants ever for the you suck chant. I love that. It's
oh, yeah.
I love it. Anyway.
Perfectly
okay.
timed and choreographed as well.
Let's not get off the rails here. You need to answer the question. You got two more presidents. I'm going to let you answer them for yourself as opposed to me answering for you.
All right. Well, the two that I would put on my Mount Rushmore, we've already got Whitmore. We've already got David Palmer. In the third slot, President Josiah Jed Bartlett of the West Wing. And I know that makes me sound like a complete and utter nerd, but that show was pretty big in my formative years. And the West Wing was excellent. I'm a big fan of Aaron Sorkin. I think that no matter what he writes, no matter the plays and the screenplays that he's written have been tremendous. Few Good Men, also one of my favorite movies. He was one of the writers of that, a lead writer in that movie, along with Rob Reiner, who directed it. He also directed The American President, which I considered putting Andrew Shepard up there, but I just think that, you know, Bartlett's record and what he had to deal with in his presidency was a lot more difficult than having to deal with, you know, just getting a girlfriend. So, you know what? I give Bartlett the nod here. I thought Martin Sheen was phenomenal in this role and won him an Emmy a couple of times, and he well deserved it. But if I'm being honest, and I know I said that David Palmer was one that I was considering for the figure.
I have a feeling.
The Washington head.
Hold on. I'm going to,
yep.
Since we didn't talk about this, and I'm on camera, so I can do this. I'm going to write down the name of the person I think you're going to say, and I'm going to see if I'm going to be right. So give me 1 second, and then I'm going to let you go. And name
okay.
that name. Name that name.
I'm going to name names.
Because I think I'm going to be right on this one. If not, I'm giving away
and
one
I
of my
think time. You're going to be right.
We'll see. All right. So I am holding it up to the camera so the folks out there that are watching can see. This is
and I cannot see, by the way,
yes,
folks.
Right.
I absolutely cannot see what he is holding. Truly,
like
I tell you, I cannot see. It's like a bad 80s game show. Which
yes.
is, you know, but my figurehead, my Washington head, very slightly over David Palmer, goes to President James Marshall, Air Force One, Harrison Ford, get off my plane. How much better of a fictional president can you get than someone that, you know, he slays all the terrorists,
yeah.
single-handedly slays all the terrorists, gets behind the controls of Air Force One, successfully manages to keep it afloat long enough to save his family, and then fights off George Mason himself,
yes,
Xander Berkeley,
right.
the evil Secret Service agent that everybody thought was going to get away with it. He got his comeuppance after that. He fights him off. Gets onto Marine One, and Marine One becomes Air Force One. And, Liberty 24 became Air Force One. Marine One was the helicopter. That was downed as well. Liberty 24 becomes Air Force One. Of course, 24. Gotta love it. But one of my favorite action movies of all time. Pretty much Harrison Ford is in a movie. I'm going to go see it, whether it's good, whether it's bad, indifferent, whatever. One of my favorite actors of all time, and I think one of his best roles. So, yeah, for me, if I'm looking at the Washington head, I would probably say that I'd put David Palmer in the Jefferson hole, you know, because he's that much revered as far as I'm concerned. But got to give the slight edge to James Marshall in this one. He is that is my presidential Mount Rushmore of fictional U.S. presidents.
Well, I was 100% right, and if you listened on Friday, that was kind of the theme of the show, was how right I was on a lot of things.
Yes, absolutely.
Ignoring where I was wrong, but I did write Air Force One James Marshall on my post-it note. So, I said, I had a feeling, and it was, to me, I thought about naming that as the one of the two, but I wanted you to drop that one, and I thought I was going to be right. So, I agree with 3 out of your 4. And my fourth one is it's kind of a curveball, and it's kind of just one of my favorite stupid movies of all time. But President Camacho from Idiocracy.
Ah.
Terry Crews. I'm a big Terry Crews fan. I think he's really funny.
Yeah.
I think everything about him is really funny. And that movie is one of my favorites. It's becoming more of a horror flick than a comedy nowadays. But it's certainly one of my go-to movies to watch. Kind of like Air Force One. Like I always tell people when I was a kid staying home from school, if I was sick, for some reason, I would always watch Air Force One. That would be like my go-to movie to watch. Everyone has those. You know, when you were a kid, you go sick at school, which VHS tape are you going to pop in the, you know, VCR and watch? Well, for me, it was Air Force One. So,
yeah.
Real
good choice.
Yeah, of course. I mean, why not? I mean, it's a great movie. Star-starred William H. Macy is in that movie. Don't
absolutely.
You forget.
William H. Macy, great, great cast. You know, phenomenal from top to bottom. A lot of good character actors in that movie. Glenn Close playing the vice president. Ahead of the curve here, having a female vice president in the movies at the time. That was not something you saw a whole lot of. So, very good. Gary Oldman.
Cool.
You know,
I mean, come on now.
one of the best actors of our generation, without any question. So versatile, can play. You know, can play a good guy, can play like the evilest of villains, and he did that in this movie. He was great in this.
No, I mean, it really was a star-studded cast, and still one of my favorite movies. And actually, in fact, I think I might have to watch it soon because I haven't seen it in a while. I'm not gonna lie, it's been a pretty long time since I've sat down and watched that movie, and I'm gonna have to do that. But What was that? Yeah, but yeah, President Camacho. For a little humor's sake, I had to throw him in there because, again, I love the movie, and there's so many other great choices that we could have gone through. Just because I love the name, his name, and I just love the actor. I could have chose Powers Booth for just his brief stint as president, in 24. You know what I mean? It's like I
Yes,
said,
absolutely.
it's
Yeah, I mean,
very,
you
very
could go in a lot of
underrated.
directions with 24. Yeah, you could go in a lot of directions with 24 presidents. I mean,
I
you know, there's the, that you know that show itself. You know.
Well, they. I mean, look. Let's be real. They. You know. You talk about Air Force One kind of being ahead of the curve. I mean, look at 24. I mean, they were far ahead of the curve in a lot of ways. You know,
Very much so. Very much so.
and you know, one of the things, unfortunately, was that Powers Booth didn't get enough airtime on that show. You know, obviously he wasn't a more. You know, he spent you know a shorter period of time as president compared to others. So, but I thought his role and his limited screen time was phenomenal. And I'm always a big fan of that. So Kyle asks, no love for President Scroob.
Oh, Scroob, that's it is, well, Scroob was never president of the United States. He was president of Planet Spaceball. So technically, I haven't completely eliminated him, but no, Kyle makes a good point. I mean, you got to love Scroob. But you know what? Without Dark Helmet and without Colonel Sanders, I don't know if President Scroob was necessarily the leader that he really needed to be. It was Sanders and Helmet that were running the whole show.
Well, that seems like it could be an hour-long special discussion. It's like, it's like that, who's the
oh yeah
bo-
I could
who,
fill
who is the
yeah.
boss, really.
I could absolutely. I could feel I could fill an hour, maybe two, on Spaceballs just itself. the great, great, great movie.
Oh, of course, of course, of course. And but yeah, so I figured, that was a fun way to start our show today. Completely off topic.
No, I thought it was awesome. I loved it. You know me, I hate the Mount Rushmore argument, but I love it at the same time because it sparks so much. I mean, my controversy yesterday with the Mount Rushmore that I did is I left Rob Gronkowski on the cutting room floor, and a lot of people were very upset with me because by doing that. But I outlined my reasoning in the show, and I basically said that at this point I had to put, and I even assigned an FDR spot, which a lot of people were really upset about. Well, how could you not put him on there? I outlined it. I had Ty Law and John Hanna that made the cut just over Rob, and the reason being is that they're both NFL Hall of Famers right now. They're Pro Football Hall of Famers. Rob will eventually be there, and hindsight being 2020, you look back, and I probably will have a more favorable opinion of him terms of him ascending to that level. But right now, if you're pinning me down in terms of an NFL Mount Rushmore, I had to give it to Hannah in that situation. But Rob is definitely deserving, there's no question about it. But those are the types of arguments and those are the types of back and forths that a Mount Rushmore argument really really brings to light, because you can be a casual fan or you can be a stark raving intricate fan of every little nuance of the game, and you can have an argument, and guess what? It's valid on both sides, because there's no right or wrong to a Mount Rushmore. It's purely subjective. It's all about opinion, and that's what I love about that that argument. So I don't think it should be like official rankings. I think these are very good like bar arguments for fans and media and anybody to have alike, and that's why people love these things so much.
Well, and the thing about it is people come with a different angle to it. Like, they look at it differently. It's not all
right.
You're following the same just a set of standards or whatever. It's like you look at it differently. It's not necessarily, maybe it's not the four, say we're doing a Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks, maybe it's not the four best quarterbacks of all time, but four quarterbacks that represent different generations of the NFL, different eras of the NFL, and maybe they were the best at that time, but maybe there are other. You know what I'm saying? So, again, people look at it in many different ways, and that's really what's fun about it, because then, ideally, it's supposed to open up conversation and debate and really get your creative and thinking juices flowing. What really happens on Twitter is, I don't agree with you, you don't agree with me, you suck, I'm going to list a bunch of things that don't matter. And then it just evolves from there. So,
right.
Getting back to the "you suck" chant, that's essentially what it turns into. And it just devolves from what could potentially be a good discussion to just an annoying flow of notifications and nonstop just nonsense. So it's always fun, and it's certainly something that is a good time killer for sure. I mean, hell,
oh, definitely.
We spend a significant portion of the show talking about fictional presidents and putting a passionate debate behind each and every one of them. So trust me, if I had it queued up, I would play the entire Independence Day speech. Lawsuit be damned.
That's it. You gotta love it.
That's right. But I'm going to take this moment to remind everyone out there. That's right. I did it last week. I'm going to do it again this week. That not only can you find us here on our Full Press Coverage channel, but you can go ahead and check out Full Press NHL on Sportscaster. We're going to be launching a bunch of great NHL content. Both on Full Press Coverage, of course, and of course on Sportscaster. So check it out. Give it a follow. Get ahead of the curve. We're going to be launching some stuff very soon. So be sure to be up to date and get your notifications, and we will certainly be sharing that. So check that out. I got to ask you, Mike, did you watch? See, I admit I absolutely tuned out the NBA All-Star game very early. And I heard that the finish was entertaining, and perhaps I missed out on something. But for the first half, I was just not engaged at all. I the lack of any sort of defense just completely zapped the thrill and excitement out of it to me, to the point where I just didn't care about what happened at the end. And again, it seemed like, entertainment factor and the competitive factor picked up there at the end. But for the most part, it was just it was not entertaining to me. But that's just me.
Well, I will say this. I mean, in terms of entertainment or whatnot for the NBA All-Star game, the first few, the first really third, first two thirds, I should say, of the game were not anything that I would really lament missing. I mean, there's not a lot of defense. It's about flash. It's about pomp and circumstance. And in a lot of respects, I guess that's exactly what All-Star game should be. It's for the fans. It's for them to see, a lot of razzle dazzle and things like that. But I will say this, I thought the end, that Alum ending that they put in was a smart move, and it really gives players something to play for at the end of the game. And you saw a lot of the competitive drive of these players come out at the end of it, knowing that they had to make a certain point total in order to be able to win, and that they just couldn't play out the stretch and just, to say it, to hell with it. Yeah. I think there were a lot of, like I said, you saw some of the competitive drive of these players come back out, and I think there was a lot of back and forth. It added to a little bit of drama at the end of the game, which is something that the NBA All-Star game has been severely lacking throughout the years. So I liked it. I thought it was a nice way to end it. I thought it was fun. I like the Team LeBron, Team Giannis, type of dynamic there, instead of just doing, blatantly East-West. Mm-hmm. I thought that gave it a nice little twist this year. So switching it up a little, I thought was pretty good. I thought it came off well. And, all in all, I mean, I'm not a huge, huge fan of All-Star games to begin with.
Yeah.
So you're probably asking the wrong person to, say, oh, I loved it. It was great. It was awesome. I do think it was better than it has been in years past, but ultimately, I mean, if you're looking for a competitive game, or you're looking to see, players really get, in there and compete with each other, I don't know if an All-Star game, especially the NBA All-Star game, is really the place to do it. But I thought the Alum ending that they put in was a nice touch, and I hope they stay with it, because I think it does add an interesting dynamic to a game that really can be very, mundane and humdrum if there's not a lot of difference between the game that you see on the court in the NBA generally and a game like this, because the competitive level is definitely not at that that point. You're not seeing defense, you're not seeing strategy. So I think this provides maybe a little bit of a difference and something to watch for. I will be interested to see what the final ratings, I haven't looked at them yet, I don't know if they're out, but I will be interested to see if the ratings did indeed go up at the end of the game, if social media created a buzz and people decided to turn back over and watch the game, if they had turned it off because of that. So I will be interested to see that. That'll be pretty telltale, I think, in terms of what the success level of this game would be.
No, and look, I admittedly did not watch the end of it because, again, I tuned out. I'm with you. I don't generally watch a lot of these all-star games just because, I mean, they're really not that entertaining to me. I mean, I understand why, you know, football and hockey in particular, you know, you're not going to keep that physical aspect in an exhibition game, and I get that. But I just, like I said, I was so tuned out by, like, I mean, this wasn't just, like, 30% defense. This was... This was bad.
0.0.
That's right.
Zero.
There was absolutely no defense.
And yes, that's right, Dean Wormer. Yes. Absolutely.
And you know, if he was president, perhaps. No. Look, that's not, now we're getting into hypotheticals, and we know hypotheticals are ridiculous. You know, ignoring the fact that we're debating fictional presidents, but whatever. I just tuned out. And the same thing with, you know, I never even turn on the Pro Bowl. So at least I turned on the NBA All-Star game. I never even turned on the baseball All-Star game. Although I guess that's the one that you can get closest to the purity of the actual game because, you know, you can't really, you know, it's not like it's a physical game, so you can't lessen up what you're doing. You know, with hockey, obviously, you're not going to go out there and play like it's game 7 of a playoff game. You know, it's more about the skill competition and stuff like that in the NHL, in my opinion. But for the most part, I don't generally tune in at all. I mean, I kind of just use that as a weekend off and just kind of get away from whatever sport is having their all-star game because, you know, it is what it is. Like, even the Home Run Derby, I'm just like, meh. You know, it used to be so exciting. Now it's just on it. I don't know.
No, it's true. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it's, and I hate to say this, I think sometimes maybe it's the level of competition that you see. But, you know, there were some great shooters and things like that in the NBA 3-point contest and the dunk contest and whatnot. But when you're younger, I think those events really take on a whole new life of their own.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember growing up watching the dunk contests and Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins. I mean, you know, these are the guys that I grew up as a very young child watching in the dunk contest. Larry Bird was still doing the 3-point contest. I remember watching the 3-point contest where he called it. And he says, all right, which one of y'all is playing for second place? And he went out and he backed it up. I mean, I remember being slightly older and getting into my early teenage years and watching Reggie Miller dominate that and Mark Price and guys like that. And believe it or not, even guys like Tim Legler and mm-hmm. you know, the players that competed in these events. Now, those are not household names. So you can't sit there and say, oh, well, they had the big stars back in my day and now they don't have anybody. No, I think they have the nice balance of stars. But I think when you're a kid, I think those events take on a whole new meaning. It just, for me, it just doesn't elicit the same type of response that I used to have when I was younger. Even the Home Run Derby, you know, I mean, you look at these players that are larger than life and just to you, they're heroes and whatnot. Now you look at it and they're fun to watch, but it just doesn't have that same feeling. So that's why I don't really watch those anymore. It's not an indictment on the competition level that's in there. It's just, I think, a matter of how you perceive it as you get older and as your tastes change and as your fandom evolves as well.
No, and that's a good point, too. It's just like, you know, when you're a kid, like you said, when you're a kid and you watch these athletes, you put them up on a pedestal. But then when you get older and you learn that, hey, they're just as effed up and screwed up as you are. And you're like, oh, okay, you know what? They're not really, really like superheroes or anything like that. You know, as a kid, you think they are. But, you know, as you get older, you realize that they're just like you and me and everyone else that's out there. They just happen to do something very, very well. And they do it very well for a lot of money. So, which good for them, but yeah. So to me, it's just not entertaining. And Kyle agrees with me in our chat room. He says, I'd much rather watch skills competitions than the actual game. And for the most part, that's true. Like I love watching the NHL skills competition. I love, you know, I think the events, like, I mean, again, I do think that the dunk contest has lost a little bit of its luster, but things like that are a little bit more entertaining than the actual game itself. And, you know, and again, I kind of rip on the Home Run Derby a lot, and I will continue to do that, but it is infinitely more entertaining to me than the actual All-Star game and all that. Although the one thing, in my opinion, that that baseball has going for them is the mystique of the game. And I think this is the one time where you can, Kyle says he reps on baseball. He's a big curling fan. Apparently. I don't know if you're a big curling guy, Mike, but,
During the Olympics, yeah. I mean, you got to be up for it. I mean, it's always it's always good. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, when the Olympics is not on, I'm probably not watching any curling. But it's an intriguing sport. I will say that it is an intriguing sport.
Hey, it's played on ice, so you know what, I'll give it a chance.
That's right.
But yeah, you know, going back to baseball, it's the history of it. You know, I remember 1999. You know. That's kind of the all-star game for me that really resonates because, you know, it was Ted Williams, it was Fenway Park, blah, 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 blah. And you had, you know, just the history of the game. And I think it's best, you know, I think the baseball all-star game is essentially what, you know, is the best of those exhibition games, in my opinion, just because, again, you can't really lessen what you do, you know. You can't really ease up on what you do. You're still going to hit the ball. You're going to still throw the ball hard and all that stuff. So, you know, you can't really change it to me. Like, if they told me tomorrow that they're going to get rid of all of them, I'd be all right with that. I wouldn't lose any sleep. it would just mean we won't have a 10-day break in the NHL, which, you know, benefited some teams. But for the most part, I'd rather just not have one. Do a tournament. Do something else. I don't care. Do nothing. Give them a break. Give them just a week off to recharge and regroup. But, yeah. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree with you when it comes to that. I really do. And, you know, if you're fans of, I know we're probably angering some of our fans that might be, you know, big supporters of the All-Star games and whatnot. And look, I mean, if it's your thing, I mean, that's great. That's why they have All-Star games. I mean, it's definitely, I'm sure it's entertaining for a lot of people and people really get into it. It's just, I agree with you. I'm just kind of, you know, malaise on the whole type thing. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens in the future. There's rumors about the NFL making some adjustments to the Pro Bowl and things of that nature as well. So, you know, these things have to evolve year after year to maintain the relevance. So I'm always open to suggestion.
Well, that is one that I can say very emphatically that the Pro Bowl is the most useless event. I mean, for a league that, you know, just commands the attention of so many people week in and week out for such a short period of time throughout the actual year. The Pro Bowl is the most useless event to ever. And trust me, the NFL, you know, puts on a lot of useless events. This is certainly on top of it. Like I said, when you have your Pro Bowl in Orlando, like,
yeah,
I mean, that kind of says everything. And no offense to anyone who might live in Orlando. Look, I live in Florida. I'm not knocking, you know, the people in Orlando. I'm just saying, if you're going to have a big Pro Bowl event and you're downgrading from Hawaii to Orlando, I mean, it just, to me, it tells you all you need to know. And I couldn't care less about the Pro Bowl. I don't even really like the NFL skills competition because, again, it just doesn't, to me, it doesn't, it doesn't get the same feeling as me watching like the NHL skills competition or something like that. So to me, you just get rid of the Pro Bowl, please.
Yeah, it is true. I mean, I think with the NFL weekend, I think you want to make these guys, you know, Pro Bowlers. I think that's fine. I don't think you necessarily need the game. I think skills competitions would be fun, giving these guys an opportunity to come down and be able to hang out and train and whatnot would be good. But that, to me, that's really about it. That's one All-Star game that I think they can probably let go, especially because it's at the end of the season. You know, at least the others happen midway through the season, so it's a break, it's an opportunity for, you know, guys to come together and be able to relax a little bit, take some time off. I think especially at the end of the year, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense at that point.
My favorite Pro Bowl memory of all time was Sean Taylor lighting up, and I can't remember which punter it was, but lighting him up on the sidelines and just... It was fantastic because, like, you know, that's kind of like the unwritten rule is like, hey, you know, it's the Pro Bowl. We're not, you know, we're not out here ready to go take each other's heads right off. And, you know, anyone who knows who, you know, the late Sean Taylor is, it was like, you know what? I'm
absolutely,
I don't care. I'm going to go out and play football. And it was that to me was like the only time I've ever watched a Pro Bowl and was like, oh my God, that was awesome. Like,
yep, that's
what
true.
Am I watching here, really, yeah. You know, so, but, yeah, so. We'll see if they change. Maybe they're listening to us and they're finally like, you know what, these guys are onto something. Let's just get rid of the whole thing because, you know, forget about the fact that the, you know, adding more games and playing more useless games is kind of counter what they want to do in terms of helping players stay healthier. Let's just focus on the fact that it's just a terrible event. Let's be real. So we spent a significant amount of time talking about fictional presidents today, and I'm happy about that, Mike. I really am.
I am as well. I think it's a perfect way to kick off the week here. Short work week for a lot of people.
Oh, keep going. Keep going, Mike.
And there is no, I can't do the brother love
no,
today.
No, it's okay.
I would love to. That elongated just would be a little too much on the throat. But I think it did. I think it brought it brings the country together at a time where we need it most, my friend.
No, I agree, and like I said,
and the love is what we need.
That's right, and you know what? I think we're just going to end every show like this every day because this is a perfect way to wrap things up. You know, maybe some days tensions are going to be flying. Maybe we're a little bit intense. You know, maybe you know blood pressure is rising, and then we listen to this and we close out the show. And folks, if you're out there listening, whether it's on Full Press Radio or watching us on Sportscaster.com, hopefully this calms you down and gets you ready for your day. Because again, we're all about love here at FBC Radio, and we will be back to love all of you once again tomorrow at 8 a.m. And you know, please don't read too much into that comment. I didn't really think about it before I said it, but please join us 8 a.m. tomorrow on Full Press Radio on Sportscaster. And of course, in the meantime, give us a follow on Twitter. It's at FBC Radio Live. And of course, I'm at IGLEN31. He is at MDABATEFBC, and of course, check out all of our great podcasts. Search them on Apple, Spotify, iTunes, all that great stuff. Folks, we will be back tomorrow. Have a great day.